I still call myself an addict. And that's because I will always be an addict. I have no choice. That is forever. But every day I get to choose whether I'm in recovery.
The addiction to power is always about the emptiness that you try and fill from the outside.
And when I got clean, they told me there were three principles that were so important, if I didn't practice them on a daily basis, I wouldn't live. They told me I had to practice rigorous authenticity, I had to surrender the outcome, and I had to do uncomfortable work.
Whoa, 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 uncomfortable work. Hey, listen, I want to welcome everybody back to a new episode of The Everyday Addict. I am your host, Chris White. Listen, if you haven't liked, subscribed, or become a part of my team, you need to become a part of that team. I have some very special guests in the audience with me today from two different companies, two different sides of the world, meaning Houston, because if you live in Houston, you are on different sides of the world. You live in the Southwest or the Northwest. Absolutely. Trust me. So I'm going to allow them to introduce themselves and tell me a little bit about them and what they do and what they represent. So to my left is the lovely Faith. Faith, introduce yourself to the people and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hello, everyone. I'm Faith Bowen with Magnolia City Detox.
Now, Faith is going to have to stay in front of that microphone because I already see right now she's already creating. She's showing avoidance issues. So, okay. So, Faith Bowen, you work with one of the local detoxes.
I do.
Okay.
We've been open for about four months, and I've worked there 3 weeks.
3 weeks. So, yes. You're fresh.
I'm
you're
very
new
fresh.
To the scene.
Yes.
So, how long have you worked in the addiction arena?
About 4.5 years.
4.5 years. Mm-hmm. So, one thing we didn't do in the beginning, and I wanted to tell everybody this because I need to give a trigger warning, because we might talk about some things that might be triggering. So we don't want to trigger anyone, but what we want to do is let you know that, hey, this is a disclaimer. So we're going to talk about some things. We might talk about some DOCs, some of the triggers, some of the things that put us in positions where recovery needed to be a part of our life. So we're going to come back to Faith. So because I need to introduce my man, Court. Court, tell us who you are, what you do, what you're about, whatever you need the people to know. Tell me about yourself.
Hey, everybody. My name is Court Nichols. I'm the owner of Mallard Lake Treatment Center, and I am partial owner of Taylor Recovery and Skyward Treatment. I went through my own battle of addiction before I started getting into the industry.
Okay. How long have you been in the industry?
Since 2010.
Whoa. Yeah. That's a lifetime.
Yeah, it's a lifetime, but I was out there bad for a while too.
Wow. It's always amazing to me when you come across anyone from any walk of life, and you might see someone and you might think that they're the picture perfect example of how to live your life, and you never know that inner turmoil, that struggle that they're dealing with. I had a recent conversation with a mutual colleague, and she said, I was picture perfect. I was a picture perfect soccer mom. And deep inside, I was dying because I was abusing OxyContin and alcohol. But I held it together so that I can save face of some sort. So I'm pretty sure I'm a former athlete. And, you know, I always call myself that guy that was almost an addict, because playing sports, you athletes are the greatest liars in the world. We tell ourselves that we're not hurt, so we play hurt. We tell ourselves that we're not injured, and we play injured. And the result of that puts us in a position to where if they give you medication to ease that pain, if you like it a lot, you're in trouble. And I was in a position where I tore my rotator cuff. And in doing so, they gave me muscle relaxers and pain medication. And I said, no, am I supposed to feel like this? Don't mix that with alcohol ever, because that slippery slope that you slide down, you might not come back up.
Right.
And so that's why I say I was almost an addict. I got to the point where I said, hey, take this, get this away from me. I'd rather go through the pain so I know that something's damaged and I won't try to do something when I'm got this mask of security on. And it actually saved my life, because a lot of friends that I had that went down that path, it turned into something more. And that's what the ism is. It's always in search of more. So
same thing kind of happened to me. You know, I would.
Okay.
I had a full scholarship to Oklahoma State.
Whoa, come on, man. I was at Iowa. Okay.
Yeah, I was 1993. I was outside linebacker and got to Oklahoma, realized that I wasn't as good as I thought I was, and kind of got hurt. You know, I got a little sprained ankle. So in the spring training, I was about to get cut, knew I was about to get cut. So I went to U of H, got transferred to U of H, got cut there. Then I went to Cisco Junior College to try.
You went to Cisco?
Yeah.
What? Come on, man.
Cisco.
Hey, I came out. What high school did you go to?
Langham Creek.
I went to Sam Houston. Okay. So Cisco, Navarro.
What,
Blint? Yeah, go ahead.
Played
go ahead.
All them schools, yeah. So I was trying to, you know, I was going to go back to Cisco and try to make one last run at it and try to go back to D1. And realizing that all I knew was sports, man.
Mm.
You know, I was kind of dumb, really, when I look in hindsight, because me and my brother were just kind of like raised to go to the NFL, almost like bread.
Okay.
And that's all I knew. And when sports was gone, and I was my ankles were messed up, my knees were messed up, plus I just wasn't as good as I thought I was. I didn't have anything, you know.
Mm.
And when I got back from college, all my friends were partying.
Right.
And I had never tried a drug. I'd smoked weed a couple of times, didn't drink much. I was just all about sports. And I didn't have any friends because all my friends were partying. They were doing cocaine, ecstasy, acid, and shit like that. And I'd never done anything like that. And finally, I wanted to hang out with my friends that I went through high school and junior high with. And I popped the X tab. And sure enough, I never came back.
Wow. Yeah. From one.
Yeah, I fell in love
with
those.
That was a ride.
Yeah, I fell in love with those. And then those left. And I started doing cocaine. And went from cocaine to crack to crack to methamphetamine. Then when I found methamphetamine, it's like it grabbed me. It was like, me and you're going to go on a long, long ride together.
I'm envisioning everything that you're saying. How did it go from the cocaine to the crack and then from crack to the meth? Because was that introduced by someone else, or it happened to be cheaper than what you were?
Well, I went from coke to crack because I couldn't stuck anything up my nose anymore. My nose was so fucked up. So I couldn't stick anything up it. So my friend's like, just smoke it, man. And I did that. And I was like, that was a real bad idea.
You're right.
It's like 100 times more addicting than coke. Right. And then, but once I found meth, everything I liked about coke and everything I hated about coke, meth did not have in it. I was able to stay up. I was able to operate. I was able to not be paranoid. So I'd find out what I was looking for, what I thought I was looking for, you know. So it worked as my solution in the beginning, but it ended up being my worst.
How long was the meth use? And was it the longest lasting DOC out of all of them?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, the meth was about 6 years. 6 years.
Wow. Now, I'm not trying to exclude you, Faith.
It's okay.
I'm just thinking, because working in this industry for the last 6 years, I've seen the destroyed relationships, the lives, but I've also seen that rebirth, that rising from the ashes like a phoenix, where the smartest person that was ever in my life was also in my family, who was also addicted to crack. I seen this guy take apart computers, put them back together, and they ran better. I mean, break down from the monitor, everything is just laid out, guts everywhere. I've seen him do that to an engine, put it back together, and it runs like it's brand new. And I couldn't believe that when he got out on drugs, he was actually a successful addict. And then when he went through different stints of treatment, when he finally got on that road to recovery and he stayed, he became a very successful businessman. And I said, this is a great look into this fishbowl. Whatever made him successful in being an addict made him more successful in business, because the same drive and tenacity was there. It was just being masked by this drug.
That obsession is an obsession.
Exactly. Yeah. So I study with, I'm also an interventionist. So I study with Ken Seeley. And one thing Ken Seeley, he always talks about addiction as a substance use disorder. And he said, once you can leave one process disorder and go into another one. He said, I've been addicted to everything and anything, from sex to food to drugs, whatever you can think of. I've tried it, because when my first stint at a treatment facility, I saw those people that were there for cocaine or alcohol. They immediately went to smoking cigarettes. And I said, well, wait a minute, that's an addiction, but we're not treating that. But that's also an addiction, right? So most of the times it'll turn into an eating disorder. So you stop smoking, you start eating. So did you have anything that you were dealing with, fighting or battling or in constant fight with?
Yeah, I was an alcoholic.
For how long?
Probably since I was 19. I knew, because when I would start, that's when I started to black out when I drank.
At 19?
Mm-hmm.
So you were drinking before 19 then?
No, I started. Yeah. Well, I just had one wine cooler when I was 17, and my whole entire body got numb. And that's
from a wine cooler?
One wine cooler.
Was this in college or school?
I was in 12th grade.
One wine cooler?
Yes.
I
liked alcohol a lot.
So how long was the battle with the bottle?
Well, I've been sober about 3.5 years. So
awesome.
I was sober for 2 years, then I relapsed one night, and then I got a felony.
In one night?
Mm-hmm. I got my 30 DWI.
That was
and
a bad night.
Now I've been quit for 3.5 years.
Wow. So 3.5 years you've been on the path.
Yeah.
And so do you ever get those times where you feel like I'm stressed out, the world's going to hell, and I just want to take the edge off? You ever feel like you want to?
No, not with alcohol.
Anything else?
Nope. I don't think so. I mean, I don't know what else to do. Like, I wouldn't use anything else unless I was drinking alcohol. If I was drinking alcohol, I would use anything.
You don't get the thought sometimes of like, hey, man, it'd be nice to have a glass of wine right now.
It repulses me now, because I couldn't believe that I was sober for 2 years and one night I had relapsed. I was like, I thought I could have one drink that night, and I couldn't. So now I know, and it just, like, makes me feel sick to my stomach.
Really?
When I think about it. When I smell it, it's just like...
Okay, Court, how do we package that and sell that? Because that's the biggest... When I talk to people, that's the biggest struggle. Turning that voice off that says, go ahead. Just get a little sip. Go ahead.
I almost lost everything in one night that I rebuilt in 2 years.
So yours is based around consequential thinking.
Mm-hmm. And I've never thought of consequences before, ever.
If I do this, this is going to happen, and I don't want that to happen.
Yes. And I'll lose all my family relationships that I've rebuilt, my kids, everything.
Wow.
And it gets to that, and then you get to a point where you just actually love your life being sober.
Yes, I love it.
You love being clear-minded, you love being focused, and you look back and seeing how long you were a slave to that bottle or a slave to that pipe, whatever. But, you know, for me, you know, I still get thoughts all the time. Yeah, all the time I get thoughts. And I understand what's going on with my brain and my mind 100%, but I'm crystal clear like she is. I'm crystal clear on what would happen if I were to take one hit today, or if I was to have a drink today. I'm crystal clear. In 2 years, I'd lose everything I had.
Wow.
And I'd be homeless within 3 years.
Yeah. Same.
You think so?
Oh, I know so.
Make sure that's not me.
That was my fault.
Oh, okay. It was clear. I thought we were getting a word from my sponsor. Okay. So, but in knowing that, that pretty much keeps you on that track.
Yeah, I talk it out. I have that thought. You know, I have crazy fucking thoughts. I have a thought like, hey, man, you're doing really good now. You could go back and do some meth, and you could buy a whole bunch and be in the whole game and overtake the game. And I just laugh. And then, but when I think about having a hit or I think about taking a drink, I'll play it all the way through. I'll sit down with my girl. I'll sit down with a friend of mine, my brother. And I'll be like, hey, I just had this thought. You know, I know I haven't used in 15 years.
But awesome.
I had a thought last night. I had a dream. I thought about you. And I'll talk to someone, and I'll say, okay, what happens? I go, I call this guy I know, I take the hit, right? I buy the dope, and then what happens? I go get a pipe, I get some meth, I take the hit, and then what? And then I'm high, I'm kind of paranoid, I'm thinking about, you know, oh shit, I got two babies now, how am I going to hide this from my wife? And then what? And then what? And I'll play it all the way to where I'm disgusted, I'm broke, empty, and I'm in incomprehensible demoralization. You know,
wow.
I'll play it all the way through, and I still do that today. And I don't tell myself today. I don't wake up and say I'm not going to get high or I'm not going to get drunk, because I did that for years and I made a liar of myself. Every day when I get up and I say my prayers, I say I know that I'm going to smoke meth today if I don't do A, B, and C. If I don't enlarge upon my spiritual life, if I don't try to get in service with other alcoholics and addicts, and if I don't try to help someone, I'm gonna get high.
Wow.
And I know that, so I make sure I stay on my, you know, on point on that.
That's exactly what helps me also.
I've never heard that perspective before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not many people agree with that, but you know, how many times did I tell myself, I'm done, I promise, I look my wife right in the eyes, and I was sincere when I said, I promise you, if you don't leave, I'm never going to do it again. I look my sponsor right now, I'm never going to do it again. I look my parents right now, and I meant that shit. I was sincere. I thought that I was never going to do it again. I didn't know exactly what I was suffering from. I didn't understand how deep the obsession went, and I didn't understand that I was suffering with something that was beyond my mental control at the time. Mm. So that book that I was telling you about that I'm in the process of writing, but it's all over the place, it's called I Don't Want to Want To. Because for me, like, I wanted to get high, but I didn't want to get high. Does that make sense?
It does.
Like,
same.
I didn't,
and, alcohol.
And that is a... I remember one time when I was still in my addiction, and I went to my first meeting, and I stood up, and I was like, I was crying, and I was all fucked up. I, you know, my clothes were messed up, and my brother was like, go here, get out of my house. So I went to a meeting, and I was like, listen, I want to get high, but I don't want to. Can somebody help me? And nobody had an answer for that. Nobody can answer that question. So I went to studying, and then I went back to school, got my LCDC, and I went back, got my master's, and I started studying schema. The Thailand's way that they how they work with it.
Schema.
Very, very intense.
How do you spell that?
Yeah.
Just how you pronounce
S C H
E M A. Yeah. Thailand. Look into it because it's extremely beneficial. A lot of treatment centers don't use it, but a lot of private therapists that know.
Okay.
They know. But I started studying philosophies, Eastern philosophies, looking at the way Western people look at addiction, and I just fell in love with it. I fell in love with recovery because all my life, I was that dude who did not want to use. Like, I would throw my shit away every day. Every day. I would be crying and smoking at the same time. Literally, hitting a pipe and crying at the same time.
Wow.
And it was going to be my last time. Tonight's my last night. Tomorrow, I did that for years. So, yeah, I'm crystal clear on what would happen to me.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I can honestly say I think 85 to 90% of the people that I deal with, they do not have that perspective. They look at whatever the consequence is, I'll deal with it when it arises. And, you know, I think back to, like you had mentioned, being in college. Binge drinking was the order of the weekend.
Oh, yeah.
After the game, guess what? Everybody's getting loaded. We're going to try to find faith friends. And we're going to we got a keg. We got a house. We're going to have. Exactly. You know, so it's like you don't think about it till later on. And then you realize, like, damn, I have a lot of friends that got caught up in that wake of destruction because that wave pulled a lot of people under. And you have people that are not only addicted to alcohol, I mean, even to this day, still fighting it. And I let them know that I'm a resource, and they refuse to reach out. And just so you all know, understand this. You have three professionals sitting on this podcast. Recovery is real, and they are all major resources. And so Faith works with a detox program. Court works with residential treatment. I also work with residential treatment. What you have available right now, if you're in need or you have a loved one that needs help, definitely pull up the information today and you'll be able to find their name, their resources, and their contacts on this podcast. Because they came over today. This wasn't expected. And it became an impromptu mini podcast. And I say mini because they're busy. They have things to do. And I'm extending an invitation to come back because I want to do a full length podcast on each one of you because everyone has a story. And so we're just scratching the surface on Faith's story. So she's kind of reserved right now.
No.
But I mean, Faith, hey, listen, in a podcast, you got to jump in. Jump in. Take your turn.
I'm too polite.
Nah. Hey, get it in. Get it in. It's like, hey, they passing the beer, the brew around. Get it in.
Oh,
grab
different.
A cup. Pass. Give me a cup. So, you know, and the thing about what we do at the Everyday Addict Podcast is it's not to make light or make fun of anyone's situation. It's to bring awareness and to be a resource and a help if possible. At all times, we want to be a resource, especially in the community where there's so much brokenness and so much help that's needed. And what I'm seeing right now with the opioid epidemic, with the fentanyl being laced into everything now, it's at the crisis level where, like the crack epidemic back in the 80s and 90s, it's now at the forefront now with the opioid epidemic. So alcoholism has always been there, but if we could do anything to make a difference and make a change, then we want to be at the forefront of that. Faith, what would you like to say? What?
I agree.
Chime in.
Seriously, like they're even lacing weed with fentanyl.
I haven't come across that. Weed with fentanyl.
Mm-hmm, they are.
What are they, spraying the fentanyl on?
Like sprinkling it on there.
Wow. Wow.
And I know someone who's addicted to, I guess it's like a liquid weed. What is that called? Dab pens?
Yeah, just a pen.
It's a wax.
They just make it liquid and put it into like a
He's so addicted pen. To it.
Really?
Yeah. He can't get off of it. And his life becomes unmanageable when he smokes it. Like a true.
So he drinks it?
No. He smokes it.
Oh, so it's the vape?
Yeah.
Okay. You know,
I've never known anybody addicted to marijuana before like that.
Yeah, they say you can't be addicted to marijuana, but I say, look, if I bring you a dozen donuts every day and you eat it day.
His life becomes unmanageable, though, like a true addict. Like everything falls apart.
If he doesn't smoke.
If he does, like when he'll quit for a month and everything will be back together and then he'll smoke. Yeah.
Wow. You see that a lot when they come in for detox?
No, I just personally know a person.
Oh, okay. Oh, man.
That's something we can get on one day, too. Marijuana is absolutely addictive.
I've just never seen it in true with my
especially,
eyes.
Especially the marijuana that's out now.
Yeah.
It wasn't like what we had when we were
young. High strain. They grow it to be stronger, more potent.
It's 98%
THC. 98%.
98% THC. What we were smoking back when we were, I don't know if you were smoking.
Yeah, I smoked.
Back in the day, it was about 20%.
10, yeah, 10%. That was the Mexican weed. That was red hair. Yeah, that it wasn't like what's out now.
And then what she's talking about is concentrated. Often 98%, wow. They're concentrating it into a liquid and putting it into a vape. And so.
Yeah, it's like how high is high? Right, how high can you get?
Oh, real
yeah,
high.
And these guys, they're so high, they can't even do shit. They're just
exactly
zombied out.
Losing jobs and stuff. Yeah.
And it makes you fiend for it.
Yeah. Wow. So now you
got kids selling Xboxes for it, stealing shit for weed. Yeah,
for weed.
Yeah. For weed. Yeah,
I haven't heard
it every day.
Wow,
I get calls every day. Breaking shit in the house, and family find out they're smoking weed. You know, break just like if it was Adderall or crack or coke or something.
See, now I've heard that about the synthetics. I've seen people lose their mind. I used to only see this in people that were using PCP or wet, but now it's like, wait a minute. That's what? Worse. Kratom? That's what? Whatever you call it.
Yeah. Yeah, Kratom is different. Kratom is like a synthetic opioid. That's what, and it's funny because it's legal. That's not the synthetic weed, though. That's the synthetic opioid.
So, one thing I was trying to do, I was trying to get a contract with the state of Iowa to do drug testing in the prisons because they were getting something in the prison that was making people lose their mind. But they couldn't test for it. So synthetics, you can't test for them. Mm-mm. There's no test for a synthetic because it's so many.
You can.
They can test for kratom now. Oh,
I can get people on that synthetic cannabinoids too.
But not for hallucinogens, right? Not for LSD and
psilocybin. You can psilocybin absolutely 100%. Now the acid you can't. The LSD you can't. But the mushrooms you can test. You can get that in there. They keep changing the molecule.
Right.
Changing molecules.
Right.
But I've caught people plenty of times.
And that's right. Yeah. Faith, you keep backing away from the mic like you run.
Sorry. I was trying to see you.
Yeah.
I got an interview at 2:00 that I need to do.
Oh.
For that LPC.
Oh, no problem. Hey, listen, I want to thank you two.
Fuck you.
Oh, for being wrong key. I want to thank you two for actually stopping in and participating in a mini episode of the Everyday Addict. And Court, tell us where you're from again. Tell us your name, where you're from, and how to get in touch with you.
From Houston, Texas. My business is Mallard Lake, and you can reach me at mallardlakedetox.com.
Okay. Faith?
I'm Faith, and I'm with Magnolia City Detox, and you can reach me at Faith, with the E at the end, B, at MagnoliaCityDetox.com.
And you guys know me. I'm Chris White. This is the Everyday Addict, and you can reach me at Call Mr. White, period. That's what it is, and thank everybody for coming in and participating in this, and we got to go, and we'll see you guys next week.